Good evening. The Legislative Committee on Pensions and Retirement will come to order. I'm sorry about the delay, everyone in this room, and I know it's a tight room. We probably should have a bigger room, but this is what we were given. We are, the Senate is on the floor right now, so we have to adjust a little bit. We are going to go to item number five, which is the omnibus pension bill. And I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative O'Driscoll while the senators run up and vote real quick. And we'll start with an introduction of the bill with Ms. Lincheski. And from there, members, we will be back. But we are only going to have testimony tonight on the first part of this omnibus pension bill, 2 minutes each for each testifier. And then when we're out of session, we can come down and we can finish and do voting on the rest of our agenda. So with that, I'm going to turn over the gavel and we'll be back. Thank you.
So we will start, as Chair Rosen said, with item number five this evening and taking public testimony. There have been a number of people who have signed up in advance to visit about the bill. What we will do is we will start out with a presentation by Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth from the Office of Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement as they walk through the bill, and then we will go in the order that I have, which is the printed order on the agenda for the testifiers. And so with that, I'm going to ask Ms. Lincheski and Ms. Barth to go ahead with their presentations of the bill. Who will be first? Ms. Lincheski.
Okay. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. So I will be, Rachel and I will be trading off here, going through the summary that is in your materials. It's the summary prepared by the two of us. I'll start in with a very general introduction about what the bill does. It can be categorized, I think, into five different areas or topics. The first is a number of benefit changes, including the elimination of augmentation, and I'll explain what that is in a minute. It phases in the elimination of augmentation as it is applied in the early retirement discount or reduction for people who retire before normal retirement age. It reduces the rate of interest paid on refunds of employee contributions to former employees. It reduces COLAs for MSRS and TRA. It delays the commencement of COLAs until normal retirement age. So in the case of someone who retires early, they would not begin to receive a COLA until normal retirement age. And it also requires the Pension Commission to conduct a study on COLAs in a couple of years and determine whether there's a better way to set COLAs than what we currently have, which is a fixed rate in the statutes. The second topic that's covered by the bill are actuarial changes. Those include a reduction in the investment rate of return to 7.5% and also the extension of the amortization period to 2047 for all the plans. So the 30-year period is reset for all the plans. The third topic is contribution increases. For most of the public pension plans in the state, there are increases in both employee and employer contribution rates. And then finally, there are two direct state aid provisions, one for the Para Police and Fire Plan, and the second for St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. There are also a number of clarifying changes in the bill that do not have much substantive effect, but they do clarify some things that have been needing some housekeeping. I'll mention real quickly, there are three important terms that will come up as we talk about this bill. The first is augmentation. Augmentation is a COLA, or an adjustment, an automatic annual adjustment in the pension benefit earned by somebody who is no longer working for the state or for any public employer. So when someone leaves after, say, 5 or 10 years of employment, their pension benefit is set according to the formula, but then it does continue to increase even though they are not working for the state or a public employer and contributing to the plan. The post-retirement adjustment, or COLA, is like augmentation, but it is paid to a retiree who is receiving a pension benefit. So very similar in concept, but different groups of people who would benefit. So retirees benefit from a COLA. That's an automatic annual increase on the pension benefit. And then finally, we'll be talking about an early retirement reduction. And what that means is when someone retires early, so as early as age 55, their normal retirement benefit is discounted or reduced for early payment. So the idea is that you have a set normal retirement benefit, but if you begin to get payments on your benefit early, there is a discount or a reduction to the monthly amount to take into account the fact that you're going to get more payments for a longer period of time because you started your pension earlier. In the plans, they either use an actuarial reduction or a fixed factor reduction. In addition to that, they also add back in augmentation. And one of the kind of general themes of the bill is to eliminate augmentation. So there is the elimination of augmentation from the way the early retirement benefit is calculated. That is phased in over a five-year period. So starting in on Article 1, I'll turn it over to Rachel.
All right. So Article 1 deals solely with MSRS plans. So I'll just give kind of a really straight, quick walkthrough of each section. So Sections 1, 6, and 7 of Article 1 lowers this augmentation rate that we were just discussing from 2% to 0%, so it eliminates it, for all current terminated members of the legislators' plan, the MSRS general plan, correctional plan, state patrol plan, after December 31, 2017. We just want to be very clear that this change does not eliminate any past augmentation that has already been credited to a terminated member's benefit. So this is purely prospective. Section 2 eliminates the augmentation that is worked into these early retirement reduction factors. MSRS does the actuarial equivalence retirement reduction factors. And so those are phased out through a five-year phase out, I guess I would call it. Starting July 1, 2018, the 2.5% or 3% augmentation that's built back into those factors will be proportionally reduced each month until it is fully eliminated in July 1, 2023. Section 3 of Article 1 lowers the rate of interest that is paid on refunds of employee contributions if a former employee elects to take a refund when they terminate employment. And so that's lowered from 4% to 3%. Sections 4, 5, and 8 through 10 are just technical corrections that update cross-references or add clarifying language. And then Section 11 is the repealer. And so this repeals so all the MSRS plan individual, like separate coverage by more than one fund statutes. So it takes all of those out because we thought it would be easier to kind of consolidate them into one big provision in Chapter 356. So the provision is still there. It's just now in 356 with all the other individual statutes for the other plans. And it also repeals what we call the contribution stabilizer statute. So this statute permits the MSRS board to increase employee and employer contributions equally without a legislative change if a certain funding deficiency occurs and if the pension commission does not recommend against the increase or modify it. So those can go into effect without statutory provisions. Article 2 is for paraplans specifically. So Section 1, again, it eliminates that augmentation that is worked into the early retirement reduction factors, para, for para general. Para also uses actuarial equivalence factors. And so it's that five-year phase out, exactly like what's being done with MSRS general. Section 2 also lowers the rate of interest that is paid on employee contribution refunds from 4% to 3% for all para plans. It lowers the augmentation rate, so deferred augmentation rate, from either 2% or 1%, pairs a little different than the other plans, to 0%, so again, eliminating it, for all current terminated paraplan members, so all paraplan members, that's police and fire, general, correctional, after December 31st, 2017. And then Section 4 is the repealer, and it's the same as the MSRS repealer. It repeals that coverage by more than one fund statute so they can put it into the 356 statute that we created, and then it repeals PARA's contribution stabilizer statute.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. Just on the contribution stabilizer, when did we put that in?
Ms. Barth?
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, it's been around for a while. It's changed throughout the years. I can look at and see. Yeah,
it's Representative Thiessen, I hate to put her on the spot, but Representative Murphy may probably know more about that than any of us at this point with her longevity with the commission. I wasn't going to put you on the spot, Representative Murphy. I was just saying that I think you were probably the one who might know that. Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Ms. Barth, if you want to continue.
I'll take over from there and address Teachers Retirement Association and the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. These are very similar changes to the ones that we just talked about for PARA and MSRS. As in the others, we are removing the contribution stabilizer provision that Representative Thiessen just mentioned. We are eliminating augmentation as it is applied in calculating the early retirement benefit. This is similar to the other two plans. There's a 2.5% and a 3% augmentation that's added back in when someone retires early. TRA is a little different in the way they calculate their early retirement benefit in that they use the fixed factors, a 4% and a 7% factor for retirement prior to normal retirement age. Then we're also reducing the rate of interest paid on refunds of employee contributions from 4% to 3% and eliminating augmentation for all TRA members after December 31, 2017. Again, not making any changes to augmentation accrued or credited to date, but after December 31, there would be no more additional increases. Then we also repeal the same statutes as in the other case, the coverage by more than one fund statute, which is being consolidated into a statute in that applies to the plans generally, and then also repealing the contribution stabilizer provision, which does something very similar to what we just talked about for the other two plans.
Ms. Lincheski, before you go on to Article Number 4, I'm going to just make an announcement for folks. We anticipate this meeting is obviously going to take a while with some 28 testifiers, and many of you are standing this evening. If you are interested, we have made accommodations down on the level below where we are, which is the ground level, room 3 for chairs and audio, so you will be able to hear this if that is something you would like to be able to do. You'll probably find a little more comfortable at that point. And if you are a testifier, you probably know where you're at on the testifying list, and so if you do go downstairs, well, I'm sure you'll be back up here in time by kind of following the agenda and things. So, again, invite you for your comfort if you are interested to go to G3, please. Ms. Lincheski, if you'd like to continue. Okay.
Representative O'Driscoll, so resuming on Article 4, the St. Paul teachers changes. Section 1 is just a housekeeping change. Section 2 revises the COLA. It implements a COLA freeze for 2 years, so January 1, 2018 and January 1, 2019, there will be no COLA in this plan. It is at a 1% rate right now, so there will be 2 years where it will be zero. For retirements after January 1, 2020, it will resume at the 1%. We also have included a provision, as in the other plans, where the COLA in the case of an early retiree will not begin until the retiree reaches normal retirement age. The notes are there's a parenthetical in the summary that notes that this provision will not apply to people who are retiring under the rule of 90 or receiving disability benefits or survivor benefits. You won't see that provision in the bill. That was inadvertently removed, and we will be proposing that it be put back in an amendment tomorrow night. Section 3 of Article 4 eliminates augmentation as applied in calculating the early retirement benefits. This is very similar. This is identical, really, to the one to what is happening in the case of TRA. And then Section 4 eliminates augmentation again for all St. Paul teachers members after December 31, 2017. Section 5 lowers the rate of interest on refunds from 4% to 3% and repeals the coverage by more than one fund statute. And then also in this case with St. Paul, this will come in later when we talk about Article 5, but in the St. Paul's case, the repealer also includes the repeal of the COLA trigger, which is an automatic increase when certain funding ratios are met. Article 5, post-retirement adjustments. This deals with COLAs for all the pension plans and also some general provisions. Section 1 lowers the investment rate of return to 7.5% for all the plans. That means that TRA will go from 8.5% to 7.5%. The other plans will go from 8% to 7.5%, and that's effective July 1, 2017. Section 2 is a pretty technical change, but allows the plans a little more flexibility to adopt mortality improvement scales as they come out from the Society of Actuaries. These can help the plan's funding situation because actually they have been showing people are living quite as long as had been expected. So these are to allow plans to adopt that, such as in the case of PARA, who has, or that plan is proposing to adopt the new mortality improvement scale. Section 3 resets, as I mentioned earlier, the 30-year amortization period to 2047 for all the plans. We are clarifying the combined service annuity provision, which is pretty much of a nightmare provision to read through. If you want something to read in the evening, it's a very technical provision. We tried to clarify that somewhat. This is now Section 5 is the consolidation of the coverage by more than one fund or plan into this one provision, and that's new, and so that allows us to repeal the provision in all the other plans. Section 6 modifies the COLA for the MSRS plans, not including the judge's plan. It removes the COLA trigger. It lowers the COLA from 2% to 1% for 5 years and then back up to 1.5% after 5 years. And that's specifically for MSRS General, MSRS Unclassified, and the Legislator Plan. For retirements on or after January 1, 2018, COLAs will not be paid on early retiree benefits until the retiree reaches normal retirement age. That change is put in place for MSRS General, Unclassified, in the Legislator's Plan. Section 7 makes a lot of the same changes as we just talked about, but for MSRS Correctional, it removes the COLA trigger, lowers the COLA from 2% to 1.5% for that plan. Section 8 deals with PARA General. It removes the COLA trigger. It also does the delay in the COLA until a early retiree reaches normal retirement age. Section 9 removes the COLA trigger for PARA Police and Fire Plan. Section 10 removes the trigger for TRA. It lowers the COLA for TRA from 2% to 1%. And then it also includes the delay in receiving the COLA for early retirees until the retiree reaches normal retirement age. Section 11 deals with the State Patrol Plan that removes the COLA trigger. Section 12, similarly for the judge's plan, actually the opposite in the judge's plan. Because of changes in the way we were dealing with the statute, this revises the section dealing with the judge's plan to add the COLA trigger back in for just the judges. So those benefits for the judges are not being touched in this bill. And then finally, two additional sections. Section 13 deals with PARA Correctional. It removes the COLA trigger, and it lowers the COLA from 2.5% to 1.5%. Then finally, Section 14 of Article 5 is the section that requires the Pension Commission to conduct a study of COLA rates and the methodology for setting COLAs, and that will be done before December 31, 2020, and then will be reported to the Pension Commission, and the Commission needs to act on those recommendations during the 2021 legislative session.
All right, so all of Article 6 deals with interest rates and changing those interest rates specifically that are paid on refund repayments, missed employer or employee contribution payments, certain leaves of absence, et cetera. So the rate of interest is tied in most cases to the investment rate of return assumptions. So right now those rates are 8.5% for TRA, 8% for the other plans. So now that that assumption is going to be lowered to 7.5, all the statutory references to those payments and the interest rates associated with them needed to be revised. So we thought it would be easier to create a new section, which is Section 40 in Article 6, that has a table of all of the applicable interest rates based on the periods of time that apply to a payment and just adds cross-references throughout all the plan statutes to that table. So that's Article 6. And then Article 7 contains all the contribution rates for the applicable plans. So I'll try to go through this. Section 1 deals with the MSRS general employee contribution. The employee contribution will increase a total of 0.5%, 0.25 in fiscal 18, 0.25 in fiscal 19. So it'll go from a 5.5 employer contribution to a total of 6%. Section 2 is MSRS general employer contribution rate increase, and that will be a total of 0.75% increase, split out over 2 years, so 0.375 in fiscal 18, 0.375 in fiscal 19. Section 3 is the MSRS correctional employee contribution rate increase, which will be increased by 0.5 in fiscal 18. Section 4 is MSRS correctional regular employer contribution rate, which will be increased by 1.55% in fiscal 18. So Section 5 adds a new MSRS correctional supplemental employer contribution, and that is phased in over 3 years to end with a 4.45% supplemental employer contribution rate, and that will remain in effect until the market value of assets equals or exceeds the actual accrued liability. As soon as that hits, that supplemental contribution will go away. Section 6 is the State Patrol employee contribution rate increase. That will be a total of 1% split out over 2 years, so fiscal 18 will be 0.5 and then fiscal 20 will be a 0.5 increase. Section 7, is the State Patrol regular employer contribution rate increase. That total will be a 1.5% increase split out over 2 years, so 0.75 in fiscal 18, 0.75 in fiscal 19. And like the correctional plan, a new supplemental employer contribution rate will be implemented, and that will be implemented over a four-year period for a total of a 7% supplemental employer contribution. And again, that will remain in effect until the market value of assets equals or exceeds actual accrued liability. Section 8 deletes the language that ties the employee contribution rate under the MSRS unclassified plan, which is a defined contribution plan. So it deletes the language that ties that contribution rate to the employee contribution rate that's under the MSRS general plan. So right now, if the MSRS general employee contribution rate fluctuates, MSRS unclassified employee contribution will also fluctuate. So we're taking that out and setting it at the current 5.5%, so that will not fluctuate, so it will not go up with the proposed MSRS general employee contribution rate increase. Section 9 is the Parapolice and Fire employee contribution rate increase. That will be a 1% total split out over 2 years, 2018-2019. Section 10 is the Parapolice and Fire employer contribution rate increase, a total of 1.5% increase, 0.75 in 18, 0.75 in 19. Section 11, is the TRA employee contribution rate increase, and that will be a total of 0.75% over 4 years. So 0.1875% in fiscal 18, 19, 20, and 21. Section 12 is the TRA employer contribution increase, and that will be a total 1% split out over 4 years. Section 13 is the St. Paul Teachers employee contribution rate increase, and that will be a 0.25% increase in fiscal 22. Section 14 is the St. Paul Teachers employer contribution rate increases. That will be a total of 2.5%, 0.5 in fiscal 18, 0.75 in 19, 0.5 in 20, 0.75 in 21. Then Article 8 are the direct state aids. So this bill provides direct state aids to the St. Paul Teachers Plan and the Parapolice and Fire Plan. So Section 1 requires an annual direct state aid payment to Para PNF as follows. So $4.5 million in 2018, $4.5 million in 2019, and then $9 million annually after that. And then Section 2 requires the annual direct state aid payments to St. Paul Teachers in the amount of $5 million each year, and that will start in 2018.
Thank you for the overview of this evening's discussion on LCPR 17-038. At this time, we'll begin with testimony. We'll start with PERA, the individuals that we've had sign up. Again, what we're looking for is concise testimony this evening and about 2 minutes in length. Representative Teason, I'll be right with you. Just one moment. The two testifiers, the first one that will be testifying is Mr. Doug Anderson, followed by Mr. Keith Carlson. So if Mr. Carlson wants to be on deck, that will make things move faster and give people a chance to, in a reasonable period of time, share their thoughts and things this evening. Before I go to you, Mr. Anderson, I'm going to go to Representative Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just will we ask clarifying questions on this after the public testimony?
Representative Teason, you certainly can ask questions when you have them. If you want to ask them during this time to clarify with witnesses or with testifiers, that's great. I suspect that we'll be discussing this at greater length tomorrow as the commission because we've got back-to-back meetings on this. With that, Mr. Anderson, welcome to the commission. If you'll state your name for the record, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony. And again, we are going to be very staunch observers of the two-minute drill. And we've actually have Casey who will give you the, when I say go, she'll give you the 1 minute sign, she'll give you the 30 second sign, and then we'll have the correction workers behind you just simply remove you from the testifying table for ourselves, and we'll just bring the next folks up. So as long as you all understand the ground rules, Mr. Anderson, welcome, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, Commission members. I'm Doug Anderson, Executive Director, Public Employees Retirement Association. The assumptions and benefit provisions for the three PERA's plans stand to be impacted by this bill. The board's position on each of these three plans varies, and I'll address them separately. In all cases, the board attempts to consider our mission, which is to promote sustainable retirement plans and provide services that our members value. Prior to addressing the plans individually, I would like to note that PERA's board supports the change to a more conservative 7.5% investment return assumption, and this assumption was used when PERA was evaluating the funding status and the direction of each plan. For the general plan, many of the proposed changes included in the bill were considered by the board prior to the start of the session. This includes removing early retirement augmentation, eliminating pre-normal retirement age COLAs, eliminating the 2.5% COLA trigger, and extending the amortization period. These changes were considered primarily with respect to their potential cost impact on the plan. The board considered the funded status without making any changes, and since that funded status was considered or expected to improve, the plan was considered sustainable by the board without making any changes. Nevertheless, the board still believed that continued evaluation of these changes was appropriate. And the board decided that staff should engage with stakeholders in 2007 to develop recommendations for 2018. When the session was in progress and some specific changes were considered likely to occur, the board was consulted about staff participating in the process. The board reiterated its concerns. In summary, as fiduciaries for the plan, the board was not comfortable supporting changes or authorizing staff to negotiate changes that either individually or collectively have not been studied or determined without stakeholder involvement. For the police and fire plan, the board considered the funded status and direction and believed action in 2017 was necessary. After engaging with stakeholders and considering their recommendations and concerns, the board supported a sustainability package including increased member contributions, elimination of the trigger, and extension of the amortization period. The package was supported by the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association and the Minnesota Professional Firefighters Association. We're pleased that the bill contains the board's proposed changes. The board also supported additional funding provided by the legislature to ensure long-term sustainability and appreciate that direct funding has been included in the bill.
Mr. Anderson, thank you. Mr. Keith Carlson, followed by Mr. Gary Carlson, followed by Mr. Brian Rice. So again, if folks could get themselves in queue, that will help us to expedite. Mr. Carlson, welcome. If you'll identify yourself for the record, who
thank
you're
you,
with
Mr.
and
Chairman.
Proceed with your testimony.
I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I want to start by indicating we support most of the financial sustainability changes for the PERA Police and Fire Plan, including, reluctantly, the 1% employee and 1.5% employer contribution rate increases. It's important to note those rates will now have increased over 90% since 2004, once fully phased in. We welcome the state aid of $4.5 million in the first 2 years and $9 million in the subsequent years. And we acknowledge the need to lower the interest assumption while at the same time changing the amortization dates to a uniform 2047. We appreciate the phased elimination of augmentation and intergenerational subsidies inherent in them for early retirees' annuities for all the general plans, changing them to their true actuarial equivalents. However, we question why the same treatment is not extended to the early retirement annuities received before the full retirement age of 55 for the police and fire plan. We also welcome the elimination of the contingent COLA triggers, as well as the elimination of the COLAs before the normal retirement age of 66 for the general plans. Again, we question why the same treatment is not extended to the police and fire and local correctional plans. In either plan's instances, COLAs would still be received by their annuitants for an additional 11 years with those two plans' normal retirement age of 55 vis-a-vis their general plan annuitant counterparts. Finally, I do want to express our concern about the elimination of the board authority to initiate general plan contribution rate increases or decreases when funding deficiencies or sufficiencies respectively occur. While this commission has taken timely action to address the various funding challenges, this has not always been the case. Timely responses to funding shortfalls are critical if we're to sustain the existing pension benefits for our employees and retirees. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. We'll go to the other Mr. Carlson, Mr. Gary Carlson. Again, Mr. Brian Rice is on deck. Then we'll follow by Mr. Leonard Kroom, if I'm pronouncing that last name correctly. Right,
Mr. Gary Carlson, Chairman.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Senator Pappas.
Could I just ask the testifiers to, if they could give us kind of written copies of your testimony, because I don't know that I caught everything. Thank you.
Senator Pappas, that's a great suggestion. Just get it into the record for members who need that. Thank you. Mr. Gary Carlson, if you'll identify yourself for the record, who you're with, and proceed with your testimony, sir. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm here today representing the League of Minnesota Cities. I just want to, first of all, indicate our support for public pension plans and the need to maintain the financial solvency of those plans. We appreciate the pieces of this bill that do, in a broad respect, try to address the funding deficiency that is in the plan. Earlier in the session, we urged you to consider other plan changes, and in this bill, you have the phased elimination of augmentation, you lower the refund rate to 3%, you delay the COLA until full retirement age in the general plan. That is not extended to the police and fire plan. We'd urge you to consider that as well. We support those changes. We also support the state aid that is included in the bill to help reduce the need for employer and employee contribution increases. And we support the reduced rate of return assumption to 7.5% and the extension of the amortization date to 2047. With those changes, we reluctantly support the contribution increases for the employers that are included in the bill. That's a fairly balanced package of changes that we think we can support in terms of its totality. But I want to make one last comment, that if we don't eliminate the automatic COLA adjustment, the COLA trigger, I should say, all of these changes would only serve to accelerate the payment of that COLA. So we do need to make that change in concert with everything else to make sure we actually address the financial sustainability of the PNF plan. With that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Seeing no questions, appreciate your... Mr. Carlson, my hang tight. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, did you say that you support the increased employer's share, but you didn't say anything about the employee's share?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, I'm sorry, I should have been clear that both of those contribution increases as a way to solve the plan would be an acceptable change in the contribution rates for both employers and employees. I apologize if I didn't mention the employee contribution increase.
Representative Murphy, follow up. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Mr. Rice, welcome. To identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Brian Rice. I'm here this evening on behalf of Ask Me Council 5. Ask Me Council 5 is a union of over 40,000 state and local unit government employees. I'm here testifying with respect to the changes proposed to Paragenerl. What the commission has before it tonight is a very radical set of changes. This bill has not been heard anywhere except tonight as it affects para. And there are at least five major changes that the commission is considering: changing in augmentation, changing early retirement factors, reducing COLAs for early retirees, extending the funding date by 30 years to 2047, and eliminating the 90% COLA trigger. Each of these has a material effect on the over 275,000 Minnesotans who are covered by this plan. There's no study, there's no report on the cost of this. You earlier heard today the executive director of PARA say it is imprudent for the commission to consider this legislation. PARA's board looked at this, they decided not to come forward with legislation. That meant that all the stakeholder groups on the employee side have not been consulted on it. You've now heard the two employer groups, the cities and the county, say they like it. They haven't talked to the employees who are affected by this. In the course of pension deliberation, you use the term shared sacrifice, where people come to the table and share something to resolve something. There is no shared sacrifice in the Paragenerl proposal, none at all. It's all one-sided. It all is hurting the employees and affecting the benefits of over 275,000 Minnesotans, not to mention the 121,000 deferred. It's a radical proposal. The Pension Commission should not consider this. It's cuts. We don't even know how much they are. There has been no give and take. There's been no opportunity for these people to weigh in on it. And thank you for the opportunity to testify. The Pension Commission, I hope, would remove Article 2 and Article 5, Section 8.
Mr. Rice, thank you for your testimony. Mr. Leonard Kroon, welcome, sir. Yeah. Please state your name and who you represent. Proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Leonard Crum. I'm president of MMRA. We primarily represent about 3,500 members of the former MRF pension who are now in the Paragenerl. We are basic plan members, which means we are not eligible for Social Security, and our Paragenerl pension is our primary source of income security. The average age of our members are 80 years old. I'm here to testify against removing the 2.5% Paragenerl trigger without adequate replacement or study. For these reasons, number one, prior to 2010, Paragenerl members had the same COLA as all other funds, which was uniformity. In 2010, as part of the sustainability package, Paragenerl's COLA was reduced to 1%, a far greater reduction than other statewide plans. Between 2010 and 16, there have been a number of sustainability measures passed to help Paragenerl. Approximately 82% of the cost of these measures has been borne by the retirees. In contrast, employers have been borne 9% of the cost. All the other sustainability measures considered by the commission this year are provided all groups, including retirees, to be heard. Our concerns with the removal of the trigger are as follows. Paragenerl retirees have not had the opportunity to comment on the proposal. There is no shared responsibility. After bearing 82% of the costs of prior sustainability measures, retirees are again asked to contribute with no contributions made by the employers. All of the other proposals being considered provide some type of replacement of the removal of the trigger. While there might be uniformity among the plans in removing the trigger, there's no uniformity among plans in providing a replacement. I guess we're out of time here. Well, thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony this evening, sir. We'll have Ms. Erin Leonard from the MSRS Executive Director, followed by Ms. Jill Schertz from the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund. Ms. Leonard, welcome. If you'll state your name for the record, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and Commission members. My name is Erin Leonard. I'm the Executive Director at MSRS. First, I'd like to thank the Commission staff and the other legislative staff that worked long hours preparing this proposed legislation. There was an open dialogue that I appreciated very much, and when possible, adjustments were made to the language in the bill, especially concerning the phase-in of the early retirement factor changes. I'd also like to thank the Commission for including the Governor's proposal for the MSRS correctional and state patrol plans. The public employees covered by these plans ensure the public safety of our citizens in Minnesota. The additional contributions that are included in this bill will sustain these plans long into the future, and the funds are projected to reach or exceed 100% within the amortization period. Earlier this year, we presented a sustainability package for the MSRS general plan. This proposal included reducing the assumed rate of return from 8 to 7.5%, increases to employee and employer contributions, reamortization to 2047, and a reduction to cost of living adjustments for retirees from 2 to 1.5%. The legislation in front of you includes many of these provisions, including the reamortization, lower investment assumption, and the increased employee contribution. It also includes various variations of COLA reductions for retirees and employer contributions. The funding provisions in this bill go a long way towards addressing the funding deficiency we presented to you at the beginning of this year. A lot of that funding is achieved through changes to active member benefits. While we would have preferred that the Commission adopt the Board's proposal, we understand that we're requesting significant funding and can accept many of the changes in this bill. Overall, the legislation accounts for reasonable implementation timelines that will allow us to communicate with our members. I would like to raise a few concerns, and I'll submit this in writing. However, they are related to the delayed COLA for normal retirement age. There's some factors associated with our actuarial reductions that make that more complicated, and so a delayed phase-in might be appropriate. And then also I'd like to address a remaining deficiency in the plan. So we still have about 0.5% remaining deficiency in the plan, so adding additional contributions would be appropriate to alleviate some of that deficiency. Thank you for your time.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. Can you say the first thing, concern you had? Can you just go over that a little bit more?
It's very in the weeds, so I apologize, Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen. So we are phasing in our early retirement factors and removing the augmentation from those early retirement factors. We're also moving to where there's no COLA prior to normal retirement age. So really, the actuarial factors have that built into them. They pay for that COLA in that period because we reduce their benefit more. And so the overlapping creates some complexities that we would like either a phased-in approach or something slightly different to allow for that.
So basically to align both of those provisions so they work better together is what you're getting at.
Ms. Leonard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, yes, that's correct.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. And then do you know the cost to the state of the contribution increases in the proposal?
Ms. Leonard.
Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Thiessen, I should know that off the top of my head, but I've had many numbers going through my head the last couple days, and I don't recall, so I'll get back to you on that.
Representative Thiessen.
Does the staff know what that number is?
Ms. Barth.
So, Representative Thiessen, you mean just like the straight, what is 0.25% increase against their payroll?
Yes.
Yes. So, for MSRS general employee, using their 2016 payroll and assuming no payroll growth, a 0.25% increase is $7.2 million about. And so that'll be fiscal 18 and fiscal 19 is a 0.25% increase.
Thank you.
Sure. So this is just the employee for MSRS General. I have others if you want those. Oh, I have employer. I apologize. So employer, their total is 0.75% increase.
So 21.6?
So, I'm sorry?
It's just three times. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So for fiscal 18, that'll increase by 0.375%, which is $10.8 million. And then fiscal 19, again, $10.8 million. I'm not building in a base or anything. I'm just saying the value of it.
Representative Thiessen, follow up.
Okay, sorry, Mr. Chair. So the employee contribution increase for MSRS is what, 0.25?
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, so yes, the employee contribution total will be 0.5. Fiscal 18, it'll be 0.25% increase. Fiscal 19, 0.25% increase. For the employer, the total will be 0.75%. increase, and fiscal 18, so if you break that out over 2 years, it'll be 0.375% fiscal 18 and then 0.375% fiscal 19.
Representative Thiessen.
And Mr. Chair, so that's 0.375% and then twice that in the next?
For fiscal 19, that's correct, yes.
So it's 10.8 and 21.6 then?
Yeah, that sounds right, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leonard. Ms. Schertz from St. Paul Teachers, followed by Dr. Mike McCuller from St. Paul, and we'll also bring up Farrell Borgensen, if I've pronounced that correct, just to have you on cue here as well. Ms. Schertz, welcome. If you'll identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony this evening. Good evening.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jill Schertz. I'm the Executive Director of the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. With me tonight, in the interest of time, I have Dr. Mike McCuller, current active member, vice chair of our board, and testifying on behalf of tonight on the board and active members. Mr. Farrell Borgensen, former chair, current board member, and lifetime active teacher, now retired. I won't say obviously, but now retired. I believe they're both going to yield their time to me, so this is leverage. That means I have 6 minutes. If I'd been more careful, I would have brought 15 more, and I could have had a half hour.
Use your 3 minutes however you wish.
So first and foremost, I'd like to thank the commission for tackling retirement security this year. Minnesota has always led the way. I'm pleased that this year is no different, but I will say I think it's never been more important as we look around at our active teachers and our current retirees. I think retirement insecurity is at an all-time high, so thank you. In particular, on behalf of St. Paul, we thank you for investing in St. Paul teachers. We think the return on this investment is quite remarkable. In summary, on behalf of St. Paul teachers, we are supportive of this plan. We're very appreciative to all the legislators, staff, et cetera, board members and active members who have worked on this plan to put it together. As mentioned by the prior testifier, we think it has been a well-balanced discussion with a lot of give and take. And we've appreciated the openness to all of our suggestions. On balance, we think that this plan represents a balanced of shared contribution across our actives, our retirees, and our employer base. We think that's very important. As well, we think that this plan provides several key provisions that are critical for the long-term stability of all retirement plans. Particularly, we're pleased to see increased employer contributions. We're pleased to see the investment return assumption being reduced to 7.5%, which puts all of the funds on a more conservative footing, which is in the long-term best interest. As well, when you look at our individual plan provisions and particularly the cost savings measures that were implemented, we're extremely grateful that great care was taken in many instances where cuts were made to protect long-term career teachers. So, for example, as it's been mentioned here before, we think it's critically important that with respect to early retirement factor reductions, that our teachers who have served a lifetime in St. Paul, 30 years, are protected from any changes. By way of example, I could potentially retire in several years at the age of 55. I don't think it would be appropriate for me to ask our active teachers to bear the cost of that decision. I am more than happy to give up the augmentation or the subsidy that goes into that. I would very much like to thank, in particular, our retired teachers. I think that our retired teachers have proven that this is not an us versus them scenario. Because of our retired teachers, in large part, our active teachers are experiencing a lower employee contribution increase, and that contribution increase is delayed until year five. So in year five, our employees will only go up to 7.75. That was largely made possible because our retired teachers recognized that if they were willing to contribute to the end goal, and they did that by giving up 1% COLA for 2 years, if they did that, they could save the actives from taking a larger burden. From my perspective, I think that's exactly the way we should strike policy, and I'm very grateful to our retireds for doing that. I'd also like to mention, in addition to the board support, we have worked closely with our union, who is not opposing this, and they recognize that on balance, this plan provides much-needed funding and change for the plan. They recognize that at the end of our amortization period, This plan will get the fund to a 99% funded ratio, which is where we should aim for. As well, we've worked closely with our employer. Our employer is in this bill, is providing a 2.5% contribution increase. We've worked very closely with them throughout this, and including last year. We all understand, and we've worked with staff and legislators here, we understand that there is pressure on the employer currently, and that ultimately we're assuming there'll be some sharing of that 2.5% between the employer and the state. That remains to be determined. With that, I'd ask if there are any comments from my colleagues. I think I have four more minutes.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, I'm Dr. Mike McCullough, principal at Washington Technology Magnet and vice chair of the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund. Again, we just want to thank you for your support in looking at the long-term issues regarding teacher retirement, not only for our retirees, but for our active teachers, many of which have devoted a career to serving the youngsters in the city of St. Paul.
Thank you. I'm Farrell Borgeson, 29-year member on the board. I recognize many of you people on the board. I've seen you many, many years, and I really appreciate all the work that you put into this. It means a lot to us. And we believe in shared sacrifice, and that is what we're trying to accomplish with this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not really a question, but just noting that we're giving $5 million in this bill to the St. Paul schools, and in another pension bill or the state government bill, we're taking away nearly $3 million from the Minneapolis schools and $20 million from all Hennepin County and Minneapolis folks, which seems a little bit fundamentally unfair to be giving a bunch more money to St. Paul, while at the same time we're taking money away from Minneapolis.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will ask that you refrain from that type of behavior as we're trying to continue to get everyone's testimony. Representative Thiessen.
And I do want to say that I'm happy to give the money to St. Paul, but I just think it's unfair that we're doing the opposite for Minneapolis.
Duly noted, Representative Thiessen. Other questions? Seeing none, thank you for being here with us this evening. We'll now move to TRA. We'll have Ms. Lori Hocking, the director, and Mr. Jay Stoffel, the deputy director, on cue, followed by Mr. Moynihan, Mr. Tim Moynihan. Ms. Hocking, welcome.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us this evening. And I would ask that you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good evening, Lori Hacking with the Teachers Retirement Association. I'm going to be going through, actually Jay and I are going to be going through an item that I believe is in your packet. So since I'm going quickly, I won't be touching everything that's in here. First of all, I want to say thank you for assembling a package to address our financial stability. That's very important, and we really would like to see action this year, and we appreciate your earnest effort in doing that. The board, when it developed its proposal, had four guiding principles: financial stability, which I think your bill does address that in a fairly comprehensive manner. However, the other goals of intergenerational equity, recruitment and retention value of pensions, and balance is really where we have problems or concerns with this bill. So if you could turn to the next page, there are a bunch of pie charts. On the left, there's a pie chart which displays the TRA proposal and its relative balance, and you can see that the shared sacrifice was fairly even among employers, actives, and retirees. On the right-hand side shows the current proposal that you are looking at, and is very lopsided because of the additional cuts and the employee contribution increases. 87% of the package is borne by members. With respect to COLAs on the next page, we support our 1% COLA for 5 years, 1.5% thereafter. Actives bear a very large portion of this cut, and it definitely tilts the balance against actives. The COLA delay in the normal retirement age, we share the same concerns that Ms. Leonard advanced earlier, and would just mention that this provision could really create a rush to retire by many of our retirees who are members who are early retirees in general. Same with early retirement reduction factors. Our preference is rather than repealing the augmentation that we study and replace it with appropriate fixed factors. And now I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Jay.
Mr. Stoffel, welcome this evening. If you'll go ahead and state your name for the record, who you represent, proceed, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members. Jay Stoffel, Deputy Director of Teachers Retirement Association. On slide 7 of our presentation is information on the employer or on the contribution rate structure. And what the TRA board supports is a 4-year phased in of employer contribution increase, a 2% increase on the employer from 7.5 to 9.5. That would generate additional revenues of $21 million in fiscal 18 and somewhere between $86 million and $97 million by the end of the phase-in period. And that varies depending on the assumption you use for payroll growth assumption. With a 0% payroll growth, it's the 86% or the 86 million, and with a 2.5% payroll growth, it's $97 million. And then definitely a part of that proposal would be to have the school aid mechanism contained in our original proposal adjusted to incorporate the funding needed to support those higher contribution rates. TRA carefully considered higher employee contribution rates and really decided not to go down that path for various reasons. If you look on page 8, there's a chart that shows currently TRA employees pay 65% of normal cost. Under the LCPR proposal, the member would pay 85% of normal cost. The U.S. average is 54% of normal cost. So the employees are already paying a lion's share of the normal cost of the benefit. The next page, slide 9, shows some other comparative information. TRA sort of on the right-hand side there, you can see the rates at 7.5 and 7.5 compared to the other statewide plans and compared to the national average. And then our historical contribution rate history is shown on slide 10. There's some perception maybe out there that our rates have been the same for a long time. They haven't been the same. They've been different for decades. It's only recently that the rates have been the same. For a long time, the employer rate was almost twice as high as the employee rate. And finally, in 2010, the employee picked up another 2%, and we phased that in over 4 years, but they've been paying a higher 2% contribution rate. The rate went from 5.5 to 7.5 over that 4-year period of time. So that was already put in place. And with that, I see the pink slip. I think I'll end there.
Members, questions of Ms. Hocking or Mr. Stoffel at this time?
I might just take 30 seconds of his time to say that really this package does amount to asking teachers to pay quite a bit more for their for a substantially reduced benefit. And that's really a balance issue that gives us great concern.
Members, questions of Mr. Stoffel or Ms. Hocking? Seeing none, thank you. Mr. Moynihan, we'll get to you in just a second. I want to announce the next couple of testifiers. Mr. Gary Amoroso and Mr. Rodney Rowe, if you'll make your way toward the testifying table. Mr. Moynihan, welcome. Thanks for joining us. If you'll state your name, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, legislative commissioners. My name is Tim Moynihan, and I represent the Retired Educators Association of Minnesota. I come before you tonight to beg this question. What happened? This is my third attempt to bring you a message on behalf of retired teachers. This is my third attempt to give context for legislation that would become part of the omnibus offering. Since Valentine's Day, we retiree stakeholders have met with, talked with, and written you. Oftentimes, we received responses that swelled our concerns with pension cost studies, meeting cancellations, and only housekeeping business items on your agendas. For over 2 months, we heard, don't worry, we'll be getting to it. Pensions will be fine. Now that the bill has been posted, it is clear that our pensions will not be fine. The history of this commission has clearly been one that takes to heart the steps needed to make public pensions continue and deliver earned benefits, benefits that are predictable and ongoing. This bill does neither. Now retirees see that the efforts that they made to come to the table work with the Board of Trustees to help craft a fair and reasonable pension policy no longer is a means to an end. The measures put forth in this bill in no way resemble the painstakingly made proposals that were presented to you in January. What happened? Ladies and gentlemen of the Commission, The April 17 NERS issue brief cites that our total pension costs represent 2.25% of the budget of state and local governments. The average of the 50 states is 4.48%. That ranks us 45th in the country. We are 5 from the bottom in pension expenditures. Benefits for Minnesota teachers who consistently rank in their performance with our children in the top 5. A cost analysis in this bill shows that active teachers bear 66, retirees 21, and school districts 19. This bill means that all stakeholders will be asked to do more with considerably less. There is $1.65 billion in surplus in your control. Is this necessary? I come to you tonight, along with other retirees, many here in the room, from various organizations. I implore you not to do this thing. It is my hope that you will reconsider this legislation. This is not evidence of transparency or collaboration. Please do not go forward with this bill. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Moynihan. Questions for Mr. Moynihan this evening? Seeing none, thank you, sir. Mr. Amoroso, if you'll go ahead and identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and good evening and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Amoroso. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. We represent the Superintendent of Schools as well as other district-level administrators. Thank you for the opportunity to share just a couple of thoughts with you this evening. When we spoke to you last, we talked about the TRA plan that had been put on the table. And one of the things that we stressed was that we needed to make sure that any type of request for additional dollars from the employers would be funded by the state. As you already heard tonight, we had another plan that was implemented over the last 4 or 5 years that called for the districts to pay an additional 0.5% each year. That 0.5% each year for a total of 2% over 4 years was absorbed by the districts. Those costs came out of our general funds. We do not believe we're in a position to continue providing additional resources to the pension system without the assistance of the state. We're currently looking at an E-12 omnibus bill that calls for a 1.5% increase in our per-pupil funding the next 2 years. We're also looking at the rate of inflation being projected to be as high as 2.4% starting in July of 2017. Those numbers don't add up for the school districts. That will have a negative impact not only probably on our employees, but also on the students that we serve, the 850,000+ students that we serve. One of the things that I've not seen, and I apologize if I've missed it, is what is the impact, the long-term impact of this proposal? Where will this get us in the 30 years? I've not seen that, and again, I may have missed it, and I apologize if I did. We work collectively with members of the TRA staff, as well as members of Education Minnesota, members of the School Board Association, members of other educational associations, to come up with the proposal that was just shared with you by the TRA Executive Board, Executive Director. We're asking you to reconsider, and minimally, from our association's perspective, we need to provide the funds with whatever type of increase is passed into law by this commission, by the legislative body, and by the governor. With that, I thank you.
Mr. Amoroso, thank you. Questions for Mr. Amoroso. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we know how much that is? I'm sorry if I missed it. How much the cost of the increase is to the school districts?
Mr. Amoroso.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go from memory, so I apologize if I'm inaccurate. I believe that it was somewhere in the area of $47 million when we were looking at the increases over the 4 years. And the governor had the dollars in for the first 2 years, but not for the out 2 years.
Representative Thiessen.
Does staff know how much
Ms. Barr.
This proposal would cost the school districts?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen. Again, I apologize. I didn't add it up. I just valued. So if you look at page 10 on that memo, for section 12, the TRA employer contribution rate increases, for each 0.25%, it's around $11.3 million.
Representative Thiessen, follow up.
Okay, so about $34 million for this biennium then?
Yes, that sounds right.
Okay, thanks.
Other questions for Mr. Amoroso? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Rowe, before we get to you, are you Ms. Prosser?
Yes, I am.
Very diligent. I didn't even have to call you up there. You came up. I appreciate that. So I just want to make sure that we had the right person. So we'll go with Mr. Rowe, and then we're going to go with you. And the next testifier will be Mr. Joe Brown after Ms. Prosser is done. Mr. Rowe, welcome this evening. If you'll state your name, who you represent, and proceed with your testimony, sir. Thank you.
Yes. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. My name is Rodney Rowe, teacher from the Worthington Public School District, and I currently serve as the Secretary Treasurer of Education Minnesota, which represents more than 86,000 teachers across our state. It is no secret that Minnesota is facing a shortage of trained, licensed, and experienced teachers, particularly in greater Minnesota and with our teachers of color. Almost half of our teachers leave the profession within 5 years, and we have more and more college students who are no longer entering the education field altogether. Retaining our teachers in this current environment is critically important. As I am now aware, with the amendments to this bill, there are a number of my members who have reached out and contacted me that should it be passed, they will retire now. And so this will have an impact on the current teacher shortage, and not in a positive way. That's why it is so important to offer teacher compensation packages which recognize and reward their hard work on behalf of Minnesota students. And this does include keeping promises made when it comes to their pensions. We do not support the proposed changes to the TRA fund that are included in this bill. We do, however, support the legislative proposal approved by the TRA Board of Trustees. It is a balanced solution to ensure a stable, reliable pension for our current and future retirees. It calls for an increase in the employer contribution with state aid to help offset these increases. Retirees and current teachers who will someday retire will also see their cost of living adjustments decrease. This is a shared responsibility for a healthy pension fund. We also support reducing the interest assumption rate for all three retirement funds by just 0.5%. The TRA proposal already makes the adjustments that are necessary to ensure a healthy pension fund, and other changes will only make Minnesota's dire teacher shortage even worse. Thank you for the opportunity to address the commission.
Mr. Rowe, thank you for your testimony this evening. Questions for Mr. Rowe, members of the commission? Seeing none, again, thank you, sir. Ms. Prosser, we'll go with your testimony here. Mr. Brown, you're next. And after Mr. Brown will be John Barlow, if I'm pronouncing that right. Thank you, sir. Ms. Prosser, if you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. My name is Joanna Prosser, and I'm an art teacher at Wayzata High School. I believe being a teacher is one of the most important and critical roles an individual can play in society. I have committed my life to teaching. You can ask my family, and they'll complain about how I'm always working or thinking about school. Even in the summer, I am working on improving my teaching craft. There is no such thing as an off hour in teaching. I am currently making another financial investment in further schooling by pursuing my Master's of Education to help myself become a stronger educator. I spend my time, emotions, and money on being the best teacher for my students. I begin my mornings immediately thinking about the needs of my students, often arriving early to work one-on-one with students. I place my students' needs before my own in the hopes of supporting their success. I spend my lunches in IEP meetings for students with special needs, calling parents, connecting with other staff to collaborate on best practice and preparing for anything and everything that comes my way in a typical school day. I view teaching as a long game. I am spending my working career dedicated to my students, the ones who will become the future leaders, entrepreneurs, workers, and most importantly, citizens. Being a public school teacher is different from a private sector job. As a teacher, I earn a more modest salary, but I continue my life's work knowing I can retire with dignity with a stable and reliable pension. Instead of chipping away at pension benefits, lawmakers instead should focus on growing teacher shortage. How can we attract and retain the brightest and most innovative into a career of teaching? Invest in quality professional development. Allow educators and administrators to build collaborative working environments to better serve our children. Provide stronger financial support to attract highly qualified teachers. Reducing retirement security for teachers is not going to encourage the next generation to pursue a career in education. I urge each of you to view TRA as an investment, not only in the lives of the teachers who serve our children, but also in the future of our children who stand to gain great life skills from their dedicated teachers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Members, questions for the testifier? Done a thorough job. Thank you. Our next testifier, Mr. Joel Brown, if you'll identify yourself for the record and who you represent, proceed with your testimony, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Rosen, Judy says hi. My name is Joseph E. Brown, Sr. I serve as a superintendent of Fairmont Area Schools located in South Central Minnesota. Having just reached my 66th birthday, I have a personal interest in the health of Minnesota pensions. As school superintendent, I have a professional interest in providing a healthy pension for our faculty and support staff. Minnesota is experiencing a severe teacher shortage. My administrative assistant tells me that 10 years ago, when we would have one elementary opening, we would receive over 100 applications. 3 years ago, we had three openings at the elementary level. Due to retirements, we had five apps. We interviewed all five, hired three. 2 years ago, we had a fifth grade opening and received no applications. I had to recruit a teacher from a neighboring school district after she turned me down twice. As a former chair of the Iowa Senate Education Committee, I would ask myself two questions before I voted on any legislation impacting teachers. One, would this legislation encourage individuals to enter the teaching profession? And two, would this legislation encourage practicing teachers to remain in the teaching profession? If the answer were yes to both of these questions, I would vote for the legislation. If not, I would vote no. I fully understand that elections have consequences, but I also understand that legislation has consequences. Since Wisconsin legislature passed Act 10 5 years ago, 3,000 teachers have left Wisconsin. My home state of Iowa, 5 weeks ago, passed major changes to Chapter 20. Within 48 hours of that law passing, I personally received 14 applications from teachers from Iowa. I hired two of them last Saturday. They're great teachers, and you can ask me about them if you want a question. In isolation, the proposed pension bill may be okay. However, without an adequate increase in local government aid and the school foundation formula, the net result is twofold. One, unfunded mandates placed on cities, counties, and school districts. And two, a tax increase on every public employee in the state of Minnesota. With a projected surplus, it seems to be inconsistent public policy to have both a tax reduction for some and a tax increase for every public employee. Once again, the legislation has consequences. I'm glad to yield.
Thank you, sir. Questions for Mr. Brown, members? Seeing none, thank you, sir, for your testimony this evening. And Mr. Barthwell, we'll get to you, and I just want to double check. Mr. Corgan?
Corgard.
Very good, sir. And then Ms. Grace Kelleher will be next after that. Mr. Barthel, if you will go ahead and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony this evening, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. My name is John Barthelow. I'm a social studies teacher in the St. Michael Albertville School District, and I've been teaching for 6 years. When I was in high school, I took a class on community service, where I volunteered in elementary and secondary schools in my district. I discovered I connected well with students and had a passion for social studies. I decided what I wanted to do with my life, teach young people about their history and society. I knew I would make an okay salary teaching. If I stuck with it, I could retire with dignity because of the reliable, sustainable pension that I'd earned over the course of my career. But if drastic changes are made to our pension plan, like the ones proposed by the commission, I'd have to question whether I could stay in the profession. I know many of my fellow early career teachers feel the same. It's a false assumption that younger workers do not care about their retirement. According to a study by Watson and Tower, 63% of young workers say a defined benefit pension is important in accepting a job. And 3/4 of new hires say their defined benefit pension gives them a compelling reason to stay on the job. I'm the son and grandson of public servants. My late grandfather, a county social worker, testified here at the Capitol in the 1950s to protect his PERA pension. My mother, a prosecutor, is now retired and depends on her pension. For me, a pension is the promise that my years of service meant something. That in exchange for my role in shaping future generations, I will have this one benefit to ensure my golden years won't be fraught with financial worries like all too many seniors have to endure. As you are aware, we are in a teaching shortage. My school in St. Michael had to fill 21 positions this year. As a teacher in a small rural district from 2011 to 2016, I found my hiring committee duties increased as it became harder and harder to find teachers. Last year, when no qualified special education candidate came forward, we had to put someone in the position who didn't have the training and the qualifications. When that didn't work, we had to convince the original special education teacher to come out of retirement and come back for an additional year. Minnesota is already having a tough enough time attracting and keeping teachers in the profession. Let's not make it even more difficult by rolling back our promises to current and future educators' pensions. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions for Mr. Barthel this evening? Seeing none, thank you for joining us this evening.
Yes.
Mr. Korgard, if you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Good evening, Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Lemoyne Korgard, and I'm currently a teacher on leave in the Anoka-Hennepin School District. I taught for 35 years and now serve as president of Anoka-Hennepin Education Minnesota, our local teachers union of 3,000 members. Many teachers across the state work hard throughout their career, earning a modest salary, knowing they can retire with a modest but secure nest egg. They have contributed a substantial portion of their wages to TRA over the years and have made adjustments and concessions along the way. Most of our current and former retirees are not living a lavish lifestyle, but with responsible planning, they have been able to maintain a modest way of life in retirement. It's no secret we have a state and nationwide teacher shortage. Enrollment in teacher preparation programs at Minnesota colleges and universities is down 20 to 25% in the last 5 years. In my district, we've had jobs unfilled sometimes for months into the school year without even one applicant. Last year, we had 58 teacher retirees and hired approximately 270 new teachers with stable enrollment. In Minnesota, about 15% of teachers were no longer teaching in the state after their first year. More than 32% left within 5 years of entering the profession. In closing, I ask that you oppose the proposed changes to TRA in this bill and instead support the TRA's proposed adjustments, which will keep the pension fund predictable and sustainable without harming current or future retirees. Thank you for your time this evening.
Mr. Korgard, thank you. Members, questions for Mr. Korgard this evening? Seeing none, with the thanks to the committee, appreciate your time. And our last two testifiers before we get to Ms. Kelleher will be Ms. Sundin, and I see her making her way, and Ms. Joan Beaver as well. If she is here, we'll get them in queue here this evening as well. Ms. Kelleher, if you would like to go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent elected school board members from every school district in the state, and I appreciate the opportunity to share our thoughts on this package. Let me just start out by saying MSBA believes a healthy, viable, reliable pension system is critical to what we do in every day. Keep in mind, school districts have no direct role in creating, maintaining public pensions. Presently, all school districts do is receive a bill for their pension costs. All other governments, local governments, have the ability to raise their levies to cover expenses, but school districts cannot do the same, which leaves school districts taking funds from their general fund to fund pension costs. This is not the first time school districts have had to shake the tree for money for increased pension costs. Over the last 10 years, this would be our actual third time to fix our pension fund going forward. MSBA throughout this session has expressed concern over the ongoing TRA deficits and their need for reform-led practical solutions to ensure pensions continue sustainability. This bill also contains some positive changes we find, too, going forward. First of all, we make early retirement less attractive. We've heard lots about the teacher shortages going forward. MSBA has been pivotal in that research to actually make students go into education. Now we feel this on the other side to make early retirement less attractive to keep people teaching in a longer stint. Increasing the amortization period from 2037 to 2047 should allow the retirement plans more flexibility. Removing the contribution stabilizer will eliminate the TRA's ability to raise contribution rates on either the employer or employee or some way in between both. We are the only pension fund who has that piece going forward. Part of the solution the commission is considering is the employer's pension contribution from 7.5 to 8.5. That will cost about $47 million and would take roughly half of the $91 for us going forward. And lastly, the biggest change of all is the reduction in the investment costs going forward. Those costs alone, by going down by 1%, could cost $100 million to the fund. Saying that, we appreciate all you've done for school districts around the state, and we want to thank the pension staff and members for their hard work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members' questions. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said your calculation is $47 million as opposed to the $34 million. What's the difference?
Ms. Barr?
Mr. Chair, I don't know. I just took TRA's 2016 payroll and I multiplied it by 0.25%. So hers could be more.
Ms. Kelleher, comment for Representative Thiessen's statement?
That was originally a number we saw in one of our PowerPoint presentations going over talking about this, but I definitely go with pension staff by knowing the exact answer.
Representative Thiessen, follow up. Thank you. Ms. Sundin, welcome. Oh, Representative Murphy. Ms. Kelleher.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, the $100 million will be the reduction in investment returns we will see by going from 8.5 to 7.5 immediately.
Representative Murphy, follow up. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kelleher, for your time this evening. Ms. Sundin, welcome. If you'll state your name for the record, who you represent, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. I'm Louise Sennin, and I'm here tonight representing the 8,000 Minneapolis actives and retirees in Committee of 13, and I'm going to offer just a few quick reflections. Like the farmer's insurance guy says, we've been around some, and we've seen a few things. So let me start where we started, which was with high expectations. We are trained teachers. We start with high expectations. But our hopes were a little dashed when we saw the bill wasn't up to our standards of fair and balanced, shared responsibility, not sacrifice, and be a part of attracting new teachers, not discouraging. So unfortunately, by every accountability measure we could think of, you got a needs improvement at best. So let's start with the retiree COLA provisions, a permanent reduction in the only way retirees can get an increase with not much hope of future increase, and a delay in the COLA for the early years for the new retirees when they have to pay exorbitant costs for health insurance, dental, vision. That's not a winner. I remember when in the 80s we helped our retirees at that time whose retirement was being eaten up by double-digit inflation, wasn't called the dog food decade for nothing. Our retirees couldn't afford their health insurance, medication, or much of anything else, so we had to get the you to give us permission to have a levy to help pay that. We don't know what inflation is going to be. You just heard one guess. We can't risk going there again. Next, the so-called early retirement benefits, eliminating the augmentation. Augmentation, I always thought meant add to, but now you're taking away. I don't exactly know what you call that, except maybe unaugmentation. But if you make the penalties too onerous too early for potential retirees, they aren't going to go. They aren't going to wait. They're going to go, like you heard the Wisconsin teachers. So next, increasing the active employee contributions. Ever since the mid-80s, every 2 years, teachers already pay for the increase in pension costs based on increased pay in their contract negotiation settlements. They pay that every 2 years, so they're paying their way every single 2 years for money that could go to salaries. It doesn't. It goes to pay every 2 years for the cost of the pension increase. I think that that is not helpful to not recognize that. And last but not least, with only 13% responsibility funded in this bill for the employers to have an increased employer contribution is not new math, it's not old math, it's regressive math. So we need to have the employers take more of their responsibility as they do in other states. So, doesn't meet standards,
Sundin,
barely
you,
earns, needs
time.
Improvement. I'm at the end. And what's wrong with this picture? It's a great irony, because today, you may know, begins National Teacher Appreciation
Sundin,
Week, and we don't feel appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Sundin? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony this evening. Ms. Beaver, welcome.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, I have the privilege of being the last testifier, I believe, so everybody's probably very happy to see me. I am speaking on behalf of Education Minnesota retired members, and there are many people in this room here tonight that I feel that I have a great responsibility to speak for them because they're very concerned. That's why they're here tonight, about the proposed changes to TRA. This bill is bad for retirees, but of just as much concern to retirees is that it is bad for Minnesota students. It is bad for the teaching profession in Minnesota, and it is bad for the Minnesota economy. In the interest of shared responsibility, retiree groups supported the TRA proposal to reduce COLAs from 2% to 1% for 5 years and 1.5% thereafter. This bill goes too far and is not fair. It is not shared responsibility. In 2010, retired TRA beneficiaries made the largest sacrifice when those reforms were passed in 2010. Minnesota students will suffer because it doesn't provide state funding for employer contribution increases. Without funding for the employer contribution, the state is not contributing to a solution at all. This afternoon, I had the opportunity to speak with a student who told me she's in a calculus class with 40 students. This will do nothing to help reduce the size of that class. And her teacher is retiring this year. Her teacher, who spends 2 hours extra in the morning and afternoon on a regular basis because she can't help those students in a class of 40. This brings me to why these TRA changes are bad for the teaching profession. After a huge reduction in pension benefits as well as higher contribution rates, will there even be a teacher to fill that classroom next year? This bill is going to encourage a rush to retire, but also teachers who are saying, is it worth sticking it out if this pension's not going to be that great? Finally, this bill is bad for the Minnesota economy, and I will draw my remarks to a close and just ask that you take a look at the document on your table. It lists all of the counties and the contribution to the economy that comes from public pension beneficiaries' payments. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Beaver. I am not 100% sure if members have that handout. Do we? Oh,
yes.
There. Okay, very good. Very good. Questions for Ms. Beaver this evening, members? Representative Thiessen?
Thank you. I was wondering if we could add one more person to the list.
Representative Thiessen, I'm going to get to that in just a minute.
Okay.
I just want to see if there's any questions for Ms. Beaver. We do, seeing none, thank you so much for being here with us this evening and providing your testimony. We do have a little bit of time if there are others who would like to testify. Again, we're going to stay with the two-minute rule. This allows us the ability to be able to hear from more individuals. Representative Thiessen, did you have someone in mind that you wanted to bring forward? Okay. Welcome. If you'll introduce yourself and identify who you're with for the record and proceed with your testimony. Good evening.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. I'm here this evening representing the Minnesota Public Employees Pension Coalition. Some of the members of the coalition were unable to be here this evening, so I just want to give you a broad sense of who's in it. AFSCME Council 65, AFSCME Council 5 Chapter of Retirees, Communication Workers of America, Minnesota Conservation Officers, Education Minnesota Retired, Middle Management Association, Minneapolis Committee of 13, Pension Retirees, Minneapolis Firefighters, Local 82, Minnesota AFL-CIO, Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, Minnesota Government Engineering Council, Minnesota Nurses Association, Minnesota Police Fraternal Association, Minnesota Professional Fires Association, Minnesota State College Faculty, Minnesota State Trooper Association, Police Officers Federation of Minnesota, Retired Educators of Minnesota, SEIU Local 284, St. Paul Teachers Pension Members and Teamsters Local 320. On behalf of that coalition, we'd like to go on record with major concerns, and we do not support the bill that is before you. The coalition came out in support of the recommendations that the governor made with regard to his pension recommendations and support for those recommendations being funded. Having said that, many of the groups have testified here this evening. They've had members that have testified, so they've expressed those concerns. But for those that were unable to be here, that is the position of the coalition. I would, as Legislative Director of AFSCME Council 5, like to make a couple of real quick comments in addition, and that is our concern over the 1% cost of living adjustment in the proposal for 5 years and 1.5 thereafter. The governor and the MSRS board had both proposed a 1.5% COLA, and also the increases in the employer contribution rate of 0.75% from 5.5% to 6.25% phased in over 2 years, and the employee contribution rates are phased in over 2 years to 6%. The governor had proposed a total of 2.25% for employer increases. In addition to that, I'd just also like to mention that the governor's recommendations are included in your bill with regard to the correctional plan, and we also support those recommendations. We are appreciative of the money that you have put into the MSRS section of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, questions for Ms. Blyle? Seeing none, thank you. Is there anyone else present who would like to spend a few moments addressing the commission? We do have about 5 minutes or so left on this topic this evening, if someone would like to come forward. Seeing none, there is no action that the commission will be taking this evening on here. Pursuant to legislative rules, we can move to item number 4. Again, we cannot take action on that, but we certainly can, again, hear testimony, because I'm assuming some folks have come from a distance maybe to testify on that. So I'd like to be able to take that testimony, and the commission will be looking to take action on anything it's not able to this evening at a future meeting. Representative Thiessen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just did have a few clarifying questions.
Proceed.
First, on Article 5, Section 5, the coverage by more than one plan, were those provisions all consistent before, and this is just consolidating kind of identical provisions into one place?
Ms. Lynchowski.
Yes, Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Thiessen, that is correct. They were slightly different in language, but the substance was the same.
Thank you.
Representative Thiessen.
And on Section 12 in the same article, why are we exempting the judges?
Ms. Lynchowski or Ms. Barth?
Oh.
Ms. Lynchowski.
Okay, thank you. Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Thiessen. So the judges have a constitutional protection. There's some constitutional protection for their compensation. And we understand, based on some case law that I could certainly dig up for you if you'd like, that their retirement benefits are also similarly protected. So we've left the judges alone pretty much, I think, in every respect. So we, because of the way we had to redo the statutes, we ended up having to put the trigger language back into their section because we took it out in the other ones.
Representative Thiessen, follow up.
Another question. So, as I understand it, we have about $66 million essentially unfunded in this bill. The TRA increase and the MSRS increase, the employer share. And I'm also, the rumor right now is that the conference committees are all closing up tonight. Maybe this is for Senator Rosen. So if the conference committees are all closing up tonight, where are we going to get the $66 million? And she's conferring, so we can wait till she gets to the chair.
Ms. Lynchowski. Representative Thiessen, obviously you saw that we were in a sidebar.
Yeah.
If you would be so kind as to repeat the question.
Yeah, I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, folks, I would like to be able to ask you to refrain from discussions here so we can get a chance to hear Representative Thiessen's question. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we have about $66 million, as I can tell, of uncovered or unpaid for employer contributions in this bill. And the rumor right now is that all of the conference committees are going to close up their bills tonight. So where are we going to get the $66 million? Because that money is not in any of those bills. First of all, is it true that we're closing up all the bills, conference committee bills tonight?
Representative Thiessen, who are you asking that question of?
Senator Rosen.
Senator Rosen. Representative Thiessen, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But if we're closing up all the bills tonight and the money's not in those bills, how do we, where does the money come from? I mean, if we've closed the bills up, the money's not there. So are we actually, we're going to put this, these costs on the agencies and on the school districts?
Senator Rosen. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and I did see there was about $50 million left on the bottom line in your joint targets. So is the money going to be coming from there? Are you adjusting the education bill to add $34 million to cover the pension? Is that the idea?
Senator Rosen. Representative Thiessen, St. Paul's a very magical place this time of session. You know that. All right. As I had mentioned earlier, we are able to now proceed with taking testimony on the other bills that the commission will not be taking action on this evening. But out of respect for those individuals who might have come a distance and sat through the discussions on item number 5, the commission also wants to hear from the testifiers on Senate File 1705, House File 2126. I'm sorry, Representative Murphy, my apologies.
I have a question about number 5, or the augmentation stuff.
Sure.
December 31st, 2017, after that, there will be no interest on augmentation, right? So,
Ms. Lynchowski. Proceed, Representative Murphy. I'm sorry.
Okay, is that correct?
Representative Murphy. Yes, Representative O'Driscoll, that is correct. So as of January 1, 2018, there will no longer be the automatic annual increase for these employees, these former employees who are no longer working in public service.
Representative Murphy.
So, Ms. Lynchowski, then, so the people that have left their money and gone on, then that money stops growing as of the first of the year 2018. And are we telling them then, take your money, take your interest, and get out? Or are we telling them, leave your money, but you're not going to, it'll help the plan, but it won't help you anymore?
Ms. Lincheski.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, no, I don't think the plans are going to encourage people to take their money out. When they take their money out, it's just the employee contribution portion, which means that they lose their pension entirely. So my understanding is that nobody really understood the augmentation benefit anyway, probably because it's referred to as augmentation and no one knows what that means. So my understanding is that they will not be encouraging people then to take their employee contribution part, because I think there still is interest in getting the pension at the end of when you're entitled to, which is at age 55 or later.
Okay. Or 63.
Representative Murphy.
That's right.
I don't want to go too fast. Okay. All right. So will there be a cost to the plan not to have augmentation after 2017?
Ms. Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the plans will then have a savings for not, they'll not have to increase these pension benefits by the 2% or the 1%. So there will be a savings to the plans. If they take out their employee portion, I guess I'm not sure whether that's a savings or not. They will keep the employer portion, but I don't know if there's a savings or not in that part of this, but certainly when they don't have to play augmentation anymore, there's no liability for that.
Representative Murphy.
If a lot of people can't grow their funds, they might take it when they leave and not leave their funds in. And it seems to me that would hurt the plans, except from what you said, the employer share up to that point. But have we got a cost or a savings amount? Do we have a savings amount figured out for that provision?
Ms. Lincheski, Ms. Barth, excuse me.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, we did have Deloitte look into getting rid of augmentation on that date, and they said the impact would be about a savings of 0.2% of pay. It's hard to put a dollar amount on that because that's sort of the long look of 30 years, but there is an impact. And PARA, back in 2010, got rid of augmentation for all newly terminated members. So if you wanted to ask maybe the impact on PARA, you could, but it has been done, and I don't think it was so significant that the plan suffered.
Okay. Yeah, I guess if PARA has figured it out for that, what did they have costs or savings when they did what they're doing, if they could forward that number to me, I'd appreciate it.
Very good. Representative
Thank
Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I want to just make a couple of quick comments, and then I see Ms. Hacking may want to share some insight on this as well. One of the things that I think we need to think about as we look at augmentation, let's assume I work for a qualified employer, local school district or county or city or the state of Minnesota. And I worked there for 10 years, and I left voluntarily. I've made a personal decision to move somewhere else. What that augmentation says is for every year after I leave, I get another 2%. But remember, I was the one who made the decision to leave the public employment. So the question becomes, should an individual who leaves public employment, who's made a different personal decision to go and do something else, continue to receive that benefit? Which, by the way, is at 2%, which is higher than what most of the COLAs are that people are looking at for retirement. So there's a disconnect on that. Everything that we're looking at doing in this bill says if you 15 years ago left, you'll still accrue that time. It's in the go-forward period. If someone takes their money out of the plan, then there's no pension benefit that's being paid. So it would be a reduction immediately in dollars, but there wouldn't be that ongoing liability to the plan of a payout for a pension. So I think that those are some of the things that kind of circle around that particular issue. Representative Murphy.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I understand that, and I think my remarks from last week where I went on and on, shows that I understand that, but I didn't understand this 2017, December 31st, January 1st, 2018 thing all the way through from just what I read in the summary and tried to read in the big book, well, the bill that is being proposed. And I thought we should talk about it a little more. And maybe tomorrow I'll even want to talk to it a little more than that, but probably not.
Representative Murphy, I was not questioning whether you understood it. We're taking our show on the road. We were in a different room last week, and we got a different crowd this week. So I just thought I would reemphasize the logic behind that. Ms. Hacking, if you wanted to share some quick comments, because I would like to move on to the other item that needs some testimony this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lori Hacking, TRA. I just wanted to clarify, this comment was made, nobody understands augmentations, it's very complicated, and I want people to understand, members of the commission to understand that we don't even use the word augmentation with our members. When a member does resign, that we, before they take a refund or think about taking a refund, and I say we, it's really all the systems, we counsel them and give them a benefit estimate of what their deferred benefit would be if they leave their money with the system so that they understand the choice between taking a refund and a deferred benefit. And many of them, because of the attractiveness of the deferred benefit, will leave their money with the fund instead of taking a refund. So I just wanted to clarify that, yes, augmentation is confusing, but as pension administrators, we try to simplify it and make it very understandable to the member to make that choice. A consequence of eliminating augmentation as being proposed, I think, will result in more people taking refunds because the value of their deferred benefit is going to be quite a bit lower. So just wanted to clarify that.
Very good. Other questions? All right, now I'd like to again refer to item number 4 on the agenda, Senate File 1705 and House File 2126. Again, this is something that has been discussed by the commission last year, earlier in the session, and we are considering, an amendment this evening. What I'd like to do is I'd like to have, for the purposes of the commission and those assembled here this evening, have Ms. Lincheski just do a little bit of background on this before we start bringing up the testifiers, who, again, I'll do just as I did the last time. Rena Garney, if you want to go ahead, followed by Gail Stormquist, and then Dan Kenzie. We'll ask you three to get queued up here. As Ms. Lincheski, I turn the meeting over to her to set up the discussion. Ms. Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've heard about this issue over the last two sessions quite a bit and in great depth, so I'll just very quickly mention that this relates back to a 1996 transaction wherein Fairview Assets were spun out of the University of Minnesota Hospitals to another entity, and hence it's now been called Fairview ever since. At that time, there were a number of benefits that were legislated that were intended to ease the transition for these employees. There was a transaction agreement. It did not incorporate these changes, but it was part of the there was legislation that was in place at the time. One of the benefits, and the one that's at issue, is the augmentation. Again, augmentation comes up in this situation. And augmentation for these employees has been at the rate of 5.5% per year since 1996. And that's what is credited to their benefit, their pension benefit, until they attain age 55, after which time it increases to 7.5% and carries on until the point at which they decide they're going to take their benefit. So last session in 2016, there was a proposal from MSRS to drop augmentation for these for this group down to 2% to be consistent with all other MSRS members. This year, the proposal is back from the MSRS board, but in this case, the proposal drops the augmentation to 4.5% and doesn't make that effective until let's see, until 2021, I believe. So that's the bill. There are some other parts of the bill, namely there's an exception to augmentation that's also discussed in the background information, and then and actually the exception that is more favorable to these employees. And then there also is a new amendment in your packets. This is S-1705-4A and is another alternative to the three amendments that are also in your packet. And these are, of course, amendments, alternatives to the MSRS board proposal.
Thank you, Ms. Lincheski. And again, for the record, we did look at three other options a few weeks ago. This is a fourth option. I want to take some testimony on this evening. And again, no action will be taken on the amendment this evening. We do want to hear from individuals who are kind enough to join us this evening. And given the lateness of the hour, I will turn it over to Ms. Garney, ask her to identify herself for the record, and proceed with your testimony. Again, I'd like to observe the two-minute testimony on this just because we've visited this topic, and also to make sure that everybody gets a chance to be heard. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. My name's Rena Garney. I'm former University of Minnesota Hospital and Clinic employee. I'm a current Fairview employee.
Could you just pull the mic a little closer to your, yeah. You pull the mic toward you. There you go.
Like that?
There you go.
Okay. Let's see. I'd like to say that I do not support the current or any of the amendments. The most recent amendment, 4A, that would have a negative $348 a month less than what I would receive in my annual, my monthly annuity. That's, think about it, taking $348 that you were counting on, and now you're no longer going to get. My rent, current rent, is $870. That's a big chunk of what would make up my rent. And then I would like to point out that throughout the years, and even last year, Phyllis Kahn, she was representative, Phyllis Kahn, who was one of the original instigators of this amendment and special augmentation that we received, had said it was meant to be permanent. So I had consulted with MSRS to just to verify nothing has changed. In October 20th, 2020, March 5th, 2003, Phyllis Conquisti, I think, and then later Karen Schultz, and then in August 2nd of 2005, they told me, do not call again. It won't change. And so I haven't. But all of the amendments take effect immediately January 1st, 2018. That does not give you any time to try to make up any negative effect that comes with these change in the augmentation rate. I want you to remember that President Ronald Reagan, when he changed Social Security, he had the foresight to realize that people will be affected. And so he delayed implementation of changing the full Social Security retirement age. And I'm requesting that you do the same. If you have to change our augmentation rate, please support the original bill, but not any of the amendments.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, thank you. And we'll now go to Ms. Gail Stromquist, if you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Good evening and welcome.
Hi, my name is Gail Stromquist, and I am a former University of Minnesota Hospital Clinic employee, and I currently work for Fairview. So, Mr. Chair and Commission members, I want to make sure you understand why the augmentation was put in place. Like many in this room, when I was choosing my career path after completing college, I took a state job due in part to the great benefits. I never imagined that the University of Minnesota Hospital would not exist in the future.
In 1996, which was essentially a buyout, an agreement was struck to convince the U of M employees to go with a merger with Fairview to save the state millions, as the state was losing millions and wanted to get out of the hospital business. The actuaries said the payouts were fully funded. They actually produced an actuarial gain to MSRS General of $39.9 million. These calculations were based on the employees retiring at age 65. There's nothing to disprove this now. The funds of the employees were kept by MSRS with a payout promise at retirement. The Minnesota legislature amended the MSRS plan to replace nearly all the lost benefits for the U of M hospital employees who transferred to Fairview. There were restrictions and obligations we had to apply within the merger agreement, as well as leaving our money in MSRS, and we have continued to do that for 20 years. Our augmentation was based on our highest salaries ending in 1996. If I stayed with the state, even with paying in, I would have earned more than with the unchanged augmentation per my calculations. The state of Minnesota is not honoring the merger agreement with respect to the employees. Last year, Governor Dayton vetoed the pension. As quoted in the Star Tribune, the governor objected to the proposed legislation, saying it put the financial burden solely on retirees. You are trying to do the same with this change. The majority of the 1,200 are age 60 plus, and you would be cutting their benefits as they are nearing their payouts. This will be bad PR for Minnesota, so do not try to create a precedent by changing the statute now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stromquist. Questions for Ms. Stromquist from the members of the commission? Seeing none and hearing none, thank you. Mr. Kenzie, before we get to you, Ms. Diane Johnson is next after Mr. Kenzie and followed by Ms. Janice Lohman, if they want to make their way to the testifying table. Mr. Kenzie? Welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and Commission members. Thank you. I'm Dan Kenzie, and I'm basically just here representing myself as a former employee, like the other folks here. I don't have the numbers that the other folks have, but in my case, I'm looking at maybe 10 years left working if the health holds out. The bill is written. Is going to make me or have me do some reductions and changes in pension planning for the last 4 years of that, for the last 6 years of that. I'm going to have 4 years left over. I do support the MSRS board's recommendation. I do not support the amendments. The MSRS board and those folks from MSRS came to us at work and listened to what we had to say about things. And I think they've done a serious and a hard work to do some difficult stuff. I would like to see that we would all stand by what they say. I'm not a fan of these amendments at all. I don't think you should keep them. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you. Ms. Johnson.
Committee Chair, Co-Chair, Committee Members. My name is Diane Johnson. I am a former University of Minnesota Hospital and Clinic employee. The pension interest and augmentation rates may seem generous to anyone who was not a University of Minnesota Hospital and Clinic employee and did not experience being lied to by the University of Minnesota and the hospital, which told us this was permanent, as several employees, former Representative Phyllis Kahn, Julie Bile, who was part of the Board of Regents at the time, reinforced this and was meant to be permanent. We did not voluntarily leave employment, but were terminated and asked to become Fairview employees for the benefit of the University of Minnesota and the state of Minnesota. The employees got the pension plan, and that was it. The former employees worked out with the MSRS last year per the LCPR's request on a compromise, and it was reached as a 1% decrease starting in 2021. to allow those close to retirement to get as close to retirement as possible. I have estimated my loss would be about $3,000 to $4,000 with this year. This is just another assault on former University of Minnesota hospital and clinics who lost benefits. And I urge you to not take the amendments, but pass the MSRS agreement. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us tonight, Ms. Johnson. Questions, members, for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you. The next testifier we have is Ms. Janice Lohman. Good evening and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I'm Janice Lohman. I'm a clinical laboratory scientist, and I was employed at UMHC from 1979 until the hospital was sold. And like my colleagues, I was very proud to work for the University of Minnesota. It was working for a renowned institution gave us a sense of a bigger mission, and we were making cutting-edge contributions to Minnesota. When the hospital was sold, the university realized that they recognized that the staff transition to a community-based hospital and all the other reductions in benefits that we would receive would severely impact morale. And it was vital to the hospital, to the university, to have the employees agree to become Fairview employees. It was important to the university. It was also important to MSRS because they were afraid of the large amount of money that would be leaving the system if we took it with us. All stakeholders agreed that the sale was contingent on commitment by the employees, and the augmentation was used to ensure that the hospital would be fully staffed. The regents fought for this augmentation, and it was presented to the employees as a permanent benefit. The MSRS approved that plan. They've had that in their plans for 20 years. For 20 years, we've been getting notices of what we would expect to receive at retirement. The changes are major. So last year, they met with us. We had really good, productive meetings, and they came back with a compromise that's in the original bill here. And we support that. And they acknowledge that it is sustainable because of the few number of people that this still impacts. And so I understand the need to make changes, and everybody in the MSRS has been asked to make changes, but the amount is so drastic that there's no way that someone like me who's 59 years old can make that up at this time. Thank you for the time.
Ms. Lohman, thank you. If you want to hang tight, we'll see if there's any questions from members. Seeing none, again, thank you for being here this evening with us. And Mr. Guys, before we get to your testimony, Ms. Lori Spear and Mr. Timothy Rand will be our next and final two testifiers that I have on the list this evening. And so with that, Mr. Guys, I'll ask you to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, the committee. I'm David Guys. I'm a former University of Minnesota Hospital Clinic employee. And would like to say that I am in favor of the proposed legislation that the MSRS board has come forth with this last spring. That's written as your bills 1705 and 2126. There's been a number of amendments that have been proposed, and I'm not in favor of those. A couple different things. With all due respect to the commission, I'm kind of wondering, since my understanding is this is not a legislative budget issue, and so I'm wondering why these amendments keep coming forth, and we're not just focused solely on the proposed legislation. Also, I'd like to read a letter from a fellow former University of Minnesota Clinic employee. She could not make it because he came from Hibbing. She asked me to read this letter. I'm writing you to bring to your attention that as a former state of Minnesota employee, we were promised in good faith an augmented package. When Fairview accepted the offer to purchase the hospital and clinics, this augmentation was enacted to ensure that hospital employees would remain at the hospital. It would be totally unjust to break such an agreement, considering that each state employee gave up by staying at the hospital. We lost an opportunity to advance as a state employee when free tuition programs, as well as many other programs that were offered by our U of M employment. I'm still working at Fairview and believe you have an obligation to uphold the original agreement that was sent to the former U of M Fairview in a letter dated February 2nd, 2017, proposing a rate reduction of 4.5% beginning in 2021. Taking rate reduction, this is from Karen M. Eilerich, credentialed coordinator up at Fairview Range Medical Center, former. She's up at Hibbing. Thank you for your time.
Guys, if you'd like to, you can provide that letter as part of written testimony that we can take from the committee here this evening as well. Okay. Members, questions for Mr. Guise? Seeing none, thank you, sir, for being here with us this evening. Our next testifier is Lori Spear.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. May I start with a question? It is my understanding that with a new amendment for this proposal, that testimony is to be heard, but I understand that Ms. Blyle was told she could not testify tonight because she had already in the past. And I would like her to be able to present as well this evening.
Well, Ms. Spear, to your question, I think you've seen that we've been trying to be as accommodating as we can to testifiers, and we had some time left at the end of the other discussions. Depending upon how the remaining testimony goes, you might have some time to be able to bring Ms. Bly up.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your consideration. I will be brief. You've already heard all of this. We have been here before. You know that there's history, and we worked very closely with the MSRS Board of Directors, their representatives, who took the proposal to the board, and the MSRS Board has passed and continues to support the proposal, which is in the current bill. As a former University of Minnesota Hospital and Clinics employee, I left my contributions in MSRS and continued and expected that the agreement that had been made at the time of the sale of the hospital to Fairview would be honored. And as others have stated, we have received statements from MSRS throughout all these years that have given us an idea of what we would expect and have based our retirement planning on those numbers. So at this late date, being very close to retirement, it's very difficult to see the drastic increases that are being proposed. We also understand, I understand, that we all need to contribute and share responsibility in some way. And while I'm not excited about the changes being proposed, I would support the current proposal, but not the amendments that have been proposed to that proposal. As others said, I'm very proud to have been working and continuing to support University of Minnesota Hospital, but I don't support the proposed amendments. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Ms. Spear. Questions for the testifier? Seeing none, thank you. Mr. Rand, welcome, and if you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Yes, I'm Timothy Rand, and I'm a university inpatient nurse in hematology oncology at the university. It's a Fairview employer, and I started in 1980 with UMHC, and I've followed the issues with MSRS with this group having to do with the mergers, and I have felt that a good compromise has been worked out, a little bit painful, but much better than was originally proposed. But I came to testify today that because I recently learned about a Fairview employee who was formerly UMHC, that the MSRS estimates we have been given for about two decades were incorrect due to a calculation error of about 50%. So this really concerned me, and this employee was reportedly told that those currently receiving benefits would be required to pay a significant amount back to MSRS. This employee decided that she would not be able to retire given the new information. This information has not been disclosed to me or other Fairview employees in this class that I know. If it's accurate, and believe me, I hope it's inaccurate, I feel that the proceeding with reduction of the enhanced augmentation rates would be unwarranted and mean-spirited. I've contacted MSRS today to clarify if there has been a calculation error, but have not received a response. So minimally, I would request delay of this measure until MSRS can clarify if there has been a calculation error. Thank you.
Mr. Rand, this is your lucky day. I think we have the executive director still with us from MSRS who may be able to share some information or shed some light on this for us. I'm just going to ask Ms. Leonard to come forward here. Ms. Leonard, I hate to put you on the spot, but there was some stuff that was raised on your program. You were here, and I thought I'd give you a chance to respond to it. If you'd identify yourself.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, Erin Leonard from MSRS. I guess I'm not aware of the situation specifically. I'd have to take a look at it. If someone received, the only time I can think of when an estimate would be adjusted is if we didn't have accurate salary or service credit information. But I didn't hear anything about it today, and neither did my legislative liaison, and typically we hear of any issues associated with this particular group of individuals. So I don't really have an answer, but happy to follow up.
Ms. Leonard, okay. I ask you to do that on behalf of Mr. Rand, obviously, and I know that you want the accurate information as much as he wants the accurate information reflected in his record. So,
yes, indeed.
Thank you so much.
Very good. Questions for Mr. Rand? All right, seeing none, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And Ms. Blyle, I understand you'd like to share some thoughts. Please come forward. If there's anyone else who'd like to visit with the commission on the matter before us, we do have a few more minutes before we move on to our final two items today. Good evening once again. If you'll identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. I've testified in the past on this issue before the commission. And also participated and attended some of the informational meetings that MSRS held over this past year at the request of the commission. I want to go on record that our position as AFSCME Council 5 has not changed, and that at the time of this deal in this package was put together, the employees that testified before you tonight and those that have testified in the past are clearly stating the facts as that piece of legislation to sell the University of Minnesota Hospital. What became critical was the support of those employees, and that was the promise at that time that was made to them. It was done in terms of they were opposed. They wanted to maintain the University of Minnesota Hospital in the worst way, as they indicated to you. When they went to work there, never did they dream that that hospital was going to be privatized. So given that, I just want to make clear that that was a commitment, and our position has not changed, nor will it change, because that was a commitment that was negotiated for those employees. Thank you.
Ms. Blyle, if you just hang tight, we'll see if there's any questions for you on the topic or your testimony. Seeing none, thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on the amendment that is before the commission for consideration? Seeing none, we will revert then to the last two items for discussion for the commission before we adjourn for the evening. And Representative Murphy, both of those are provisions that you have brought forward. Does it matter which one we take up first? Do you have a preference? Do you have a testifier that, or somebody that we needed to just want to be accommodating if there's some testimony that might have come from a distance, Representative Murphy. I see it's affecting a Duluth employee. That's why I'm asking. I don't know if we had somebody come down this evening. Okay. Okay. Well, let's do that. Then I'm going to bring LCPR 17-035 before the commission for consideration. I'm going to ask Ms. Barth to background it for us. Representative Murphy will ask you if you want to comment on it, and then Ms. Jones is making her way to the testifying table from PERA. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Barth, and then we'll come to comment from you, Representative Murphy, after the bill has been set up. Thank you. Ms. Barth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So draft LCPR 17-035 permits Ann Cox, who is the Duluth Township Clerk, to elect retroactive coverage in the PERA general plan back to April 2001. Ms. Cox has been the Duluth Township Clerk since January 1987. At that time, the clerk position was an elected official position, so Ms. Cox was eligible for and became a member of the PERA Defined Contribution Plan, which provides coverage for local elected officials. In 2001, the township clerk position changed from an elected position to an appointed position, and Ms. Cox should have been switched to PERA General at that time, but she erroneously remained a member of the PERA DC plan until February 2017. So as the township clerk, Ms. Cox herself certifies employee eligibility for PERA General and PERA DC coverage. Ms. Cox stated that she did not know and was not made aware that she was no longer eligible for the DC plan when her position changed from elected to appointed. So PERA discovered the error in 2017, and now Ms. Cox would like PERA General coverage back to 2001 when she should have switched. Otherwise, PERA must return all employee contributions to her and all employer contributions to the township, and then they're open to be taxed and such. After Ms. Cox's DC account is transferred to the general plan, there will be a remaining balance of an estimated $8,400. So Ms. Cox would owe approximately $2,600. The township would owe $5,800 based on contribution rate differences between the two plans. And then on April 26, 2017, the Duluth Township Board voted unanimously in favor of contributing the amount of employer money that should have been contributed to the general plan on Ms. Cox's behalf since April 2001.
Representative Murphy, did you want to share any comments as the bill's author?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
Thank you. I really appreciate that you're willing to consider this. It came to my attention about a month and a half ago or 2 months ago. But Ms. Cox, as a little girl, had red mittens, really nice red mittens. And her dad was a teacher when I was teaching at Clover Valley in Duluth Township. It was my first teaching job. And it was a long night because there was basketball games and stuff, but Mr. Lindquist asked me to come home, have dinner with the family. And Jane Lindquist, as a little girl, showed me her nice new red mittens, and I really liked them. So I thought I would just tease her a little bit. And she got really upset that I was liking her red mittens so much that they might walk out with me. And she never quite forgave me, but she still lives in Duluth Township, and I go to Duluth Township now for senior citizen meetings, and so I see her on a regular basis as the clerk of Duluth Township, and both her folks, mom and dad, are deceased now, but we always talk about the red mittens. And she's never quite forgiven me. And so I take this bill so seriously because it could erase the terrible nightmare that the red mittens have been to her and me all these years. Not that I'm doing it for that fact, because she is a dedicated civil servant, and she really does what the township wants her to do. And I would like to correct this mistake, and I brought it to PERA, and they've been helpful, and we've worked it through, and the township has made the agreement that they have to make, and Ms. Cox can go on planning her retirement if we pass this amendment to the omnibus bill.
Representative Murphy, I must say, as I look around this room, many people will be able to identify with this next statement that I'm about to make. And now you know the rest of the story. With that, Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Shana Jones, Policy Director, PERA. While I was hoping that we could make it through without a piece of individual legislation this year, we're also happy to alleviate Representative Murphy's guilt. And so, with that, we don't have a problem with an employee making a service credit purchase of service that should have been reported if they make the purchase at full actuarial cost, which the bill provides. So we don't understand that there's any objection to the bill or to the amendment.
Ms. Jones, the procedural questions that we always ask on these types of things at this time in the discussion, has the township been made aware of their cost on this?
Mr. Chair, we have not made them aware. Our agency hasn't, but I'm told by Ms. Cox that they were aware that their liability is about $6,000.
And Ms. Cox has a liability, and if so, she's aware of that as well?
Mr. Chair, we haven't communicated that to her directly, but I'm assuming that Ms. Barth did, and that's about $2,000.
Ms. Barth?
Mr. Chair, yes, Ms. Cox is aware of the cost.
Yes. Just, okay.
Yep.
And again, my assumption is this is enabling legislation. It's not prescriptive that they have to do this. It's enabling to allow this situation to be corrected. Members, questions? Follow-up? Representative Murphy?
No, should I move it?
We can't do that this evening
tomorrow.
Because of the Senate still being in session, and we will take this up tomorrow evening.
Yes, I don't want to move it tonight.
I do
certainly
realize that things sometimes go better when there's only half of the group here, but this
right
evening we're not able to do that. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, questions for staff, the bill author, or Ms. Jones on the matter before the commission? Seeing none, Representative Thiessen. Am I?
No, that'll be in front of us. Ms. Lenchesky. Can we just wrap this in?
You know, we don't know what the next step is. So as soon as we're able to hear from Senator Rosen, then we'll know better what we have to do
once
all
again,
night tonight if we need to. So
once again, Representative Thiessen, it's going to be for tomorrow's rest of the story. All right. We will then go to our final matter this evening, which is item number 3. And again, Representative Murphy, you are the author of this provision, and it's the MSRS unclassified and a grandfathering provision. What I'm going to ask is Ms. Lenchesky to background us. We'll toss it to you, Representative Murphy, after that. And if there's anyone from MSRS that would like to provide feedback on it, we'll take them as well. So with that, Ms. Lenchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it was 2 weeks ago when we had this matter, or maybe it's last meeting, actually. We went through the memo that is in your materials. And this has to do with a change in the factors for calculating an annuity under the unclassified plan. So when you're in the unclassified plan, which is the defined contribution plan, and I've laid out kind of some of the information, the demographic information. It's a small plan, but it does include the legislators as well as legislative staff and agency people. So because of the change in actuarial assumptions that was approved last session by the commission, MSRS went ahead and changed the factors that are used for converting a defined contribution account to an annuity so that if somebody wants to take their unclassified plan benefit out, they can take it out in the form of an annuity. So they make that election. Effective July 1, 2017, those factors will change, and the change in the factors results in about a 7% decrease in the annuity. So the monthly amount will go down. Representative Murphy and others have heard from a number of staff people within the legislature about the fact that they may be retiring as a result before the end of June in order to avoid the decrease in their benefit. So there's more details here in the memo, but Representative Murphy has drafted, we've worked with her to draft up this legislation, which puts in place kind of a window here, a grandfathering of so that anybody who is at least age 63 or has at least 26 years of service over the next 3 years will be able to receive their annuity under the old factors rather than under the new factors. So it's a pretty isolated window. It's only people close to retirement. So again, it's either age 63 or older or at least 26 years of covered service. And that'll allow these people to not feel like they have to leave before the end of June in order to keep their annuity benefit intact.
Representative Murphy, as the author of the bill, care to comment for the commission's benefit?
Yes, I do. And I apologize that I didn't get back to Ms. Leonard during this time that I was between the last meeting and this meeting, where I was pondering whether I wanted to offer this amendment or not, but it was a result of the conversation that we had here the other time that I thought that maybe there was a need for an extension on the time period, although certainly they've had a year's of notice. But sometimes you put it off and you think, do I want to retire or don't I want to retire? This kind of thing goes on, and yes, I'd better if I'm going to receive all the benefits that I thought I was going to receive. But more and more in the last month and a half, I've heard from individuals, either themselves or other representatives, saying, what did you people on the Pension Commission do that's making so-and-so retire in June? And it was a greater number than I anticipated. And then I got a letter, the very well-thought-out letter, and I thought I had it with me, but I don't. But I'll have it for you tomorrow. Of a person that wrote after the meeting and just stated everything that that individual that works for us thought, has been thinking, and his had on that day, a particular day, had his interview with MSRS. And he was still debating back and forth, but for sure he thought he needed to work for 3 more years and before he would be ready to leave because of various family circumstances and so forth. And then the first person that brought it to my attention came up and said, did you fix that thing so-and-so doesn't have to retire yet? And I said, no, I didn't fix it, but we've talked about it, and I fixed it so that if plans have factors that they have to change, they have to report to the Pension Commission about them. And then, you know, it seems to me that MSRS is doing everything that the factors told them to do, and they are carrying it out, and they're having these interviews with the people that are going. But as after that meeting, then more and more individuals came and said, well, I haven't made my appointment yet, but I've got to because I know June 30th is the date. And The more I thought about it and the numbers of people that, you know, and we had in between, we had that ceremony with the 50th anniversary of House Research and the fiscal analysts. And they, when they walked down the center aisle and stood before us, and it was the people from the very beginning as well as the people that are working for us today. And there are four people that are in this category that I know of now. And I thought, I have goosebumps because to see these people, they were here 50 years ago. They were here when I came, a couple of them. And then others that came and went already. But it was so neat to see them. But some aren't ready to go yet. And so I thought I would offer this because I got encouragement from the questions that were asked by other people on this commission, too. So I thought I should offer this for discussion.
Very good. And I see Ms. Leonard is here as well. Maybe we'll get some thoughts or comments from her on this and the administration of this. Ms. Leonard.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, Erin Leonard from MSRS. So our board doesn't have a formal position on this. We simply changed the factors as a result of actuarial changes and tried to provide a year's notice, but we did also fail to notify the commission of the factors and get the approval. So we didn't fully follow the process, so I acknowledge that. I double-checked after clarifying the language with Ms. Lincheski this weekend, and this we can administer this. I would just say that these factors are programmed already. They're set to start in July. We have a team of very talented programmers that are MSRS employees that are on notice that this might change. So we might have some lag in benefit payments after July 1 just to accommodate that. But I'm guessing those individuals are okay with that, assuming they want this grandfather language. So another thing I would just point out that there are individuals that already elected to retire and have found replacements elsewhere in government. So I hope that doesn't become an issue, but we could certainly administer that if that's what the commissioner or the commission chose to do. So.
Ms. Leonard, my assumption is that we're making the factor changes because of mortality, which is what's kind of rippling through all of the many of the things that we've been dealing with the last few years in the commission. Would that be an accurate statement, do you think?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, we are making the changes because of mortality as well as some of the actuarial assumptions that have changed. So if legislation passes this year, we expect there will be additional changes to actuarial assumptions if we go to a 7.5 assumed rate of return, if we make other changes. And those will be reflected in future factors, but we'll make sure to follow the process and bring them here. And now I've learned a great lesson to make sure everybody understands exactly what the factors change as far as for employee benefits.
Very good. Members, questions of Ms. Leonard or staff? Is there anyone here this evening that would like to testify on the matter before the commission? Seeing none and hearing none, and there being no other member questions, and having went through the business that is before us this evening, we are adjourned.